Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, September 29, 2023. A South Sudanese American doctor who is saving lives in his home village of Kajukeji says the health system in South Sudan is in a deplorable state.
Now, in most villages, there's no hospitals functioning. The clinics, what we call the health centers, have been closed. And people basically have to look for health services elsewhere, sometimes across the borders in other countries.
And civil society activists and politicians say the government security operatives in South Sudan are blocking the road to democracy.
And the reasons why it is important is that so that their voices are heard and their needs are acknowledged and incorporated in the budget.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some activists and politicians in South Sudan are expressing concern over what they describe as a shrinking political and civic space in the country. They accuse government agencies of imposing restrictions on political activities and gatherings. South Sudan's government spokesperson denies the charges. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Jacqueline Nasiwa, founder of the Center for Inclusive Governance, Peace and Justice, says restricting political and civic space could complicate South Sudan's aspirations for building democratic institutions. Nasiwa says government security operatives restrict activists and other parties from holding rallies and meetings across the country.
We have restrictions in terms of some elements closing out meetings of parties and requiring for approval by government agency before you can hold the meeting or even training.
2 weeks ago, the SPLM-IO accused the government of South Sudan for preventing their leader Riek Machar, who is also the country's first vice president, from leaving the capital Juba to conduct the party's political activities across the country. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwe says South Sudanese are free to exercise their constitutional rights.
When you talk about shrinking of civic space, there is nothing as such. This space has never been there, and everybody is talking, and everybody is saying whatever he wants to say. Provide that you don't violate the rules and regulations.
Peter Lomude, a senior member of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, OSHOA, says limited political space could affect the activities of some of the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement.
Yeah, we feel that it's important that the parties should do dialogue, and also the leaders, they should ensure that the political space is open, the freedom of the media, because when people are going for elections, the media play an important role. So we feel that the freedom also is important that we open the political space for the parties to be able to engage and for the people to be able to choose, you know, the people, the leaders that they want, you know, to govern them.
Nasiwa says Section 24 of the country's constitution states that every citizen shall have the right to freedom of expression, reception and dissemination of information, publication and access to press without prejudice to public order, safety and as prescribed by law.
It's a fundamental right that every citizen and group can exercise. And I think the space is restricted. And if we are talking about moving towards democratization in South Sudan, I think it's very important that we allow these fundamental freedoms for people to express. And restricting it does not help to resolve the issue, because you may not be able to know what people want to say or want to do. And you cannot be able to address their needs if you don't listen to them.
Darren Manning, Acting Deputy Mission Director of the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, said recently in a media sustainability forum in Juba that opening up the civic space plays an important role in nation building.
The government can open up civic space to encourage more effective participation in nation building. By doing this, the government can fully understand what its people want. This is essential to consolidate trust, confidence, and social cohesion in the country.
Michael J. Adler, the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, told a gathering 2 weeks ago to nurture a culture of peace which allows political and civic space, security, and promotes equal access to economic opportunity and the transparent use of public revenue to meet public needs. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Udo in Juba.
Still in Juba, findings of a new opinion poll by a Juba-based think tank reveals that a majority of South Sudanese know nothing about the country's budget-making process. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelie reports from Juba.
Boboya James Edmond is the executive director of a Juba-based think tank, Institute of Social Policy and Research. He says his team interviewed over 1,000 residents of Yambio, Wau, and Juba to test their knowledge of understanding South Sudan's budget-making process.
There were over a number of questions that we asked, and one of the questions that guided this work is, are citizen voices being heard during the budget process, including efforts to include vulnerable and underrepresented groups in the budget process?
Christopher Taban is among the research consultants who conducted the poll on the budget-making process. He says the research reveals that South Sudan's budget-making process is not inclusive.
Indeed, citizens do not know, first, what takes into consideration the element of budget-making process, what takes into consideration the element of budget allocations. What is it allocated on? How is it allocated? Who is involved in the budget allocation?
Taban says participatory budget-making process could strengthen transparency, accountability, and effective service delivery by the government.
It means the level of trust and confidence between citizens and government is in question again. And this in totality brings on board the element of social contract.
Mary Jett Fasiak is the deputy chairperson of the Committee on Finance and Planning in the National Legislative Assembly. She admits a majority of members of parliament do not consult their constituents to understand the community's needs or get their views on what the government's spending priorities should be. She adds that a majority of citizens do not even know their representatives in parliament. Yaki stresses the views of South Sudanese on areas of priority should be included in the annual budget discussions.
And the reasons why it is important is that so that their voices are heard, and their needs are acknowledged and incorporated in the budget. As simple as that, it is very important. As for the parliamentarians who are the oversight people, they should be able to follow up this issue and to see to it that citizens are actually involved in the preparation, in the process of the budget.
South Sudan passed the 2023-2024 fiscal year budget last month at a tune of 2.1 trillion South Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we go to Geneva, where the World Health Organization warns South Sudan is facing a health and hunger crisis that is set to get worse as the climate crisis kicks in. For VOA News, Lisa Schrein reports from Geneva.
South Sudan has suffered from the overlapping effects of conflict, climate crisis, infectious diseases, and hunger for years. The United Nations reports 6.3 million South Sudanese are suffering from acute hunger, and more than 9 million of the country's population of 12 million depend on humanitarian assistance. As conditions continue to deteriorate, the World Health Organization reports 500,000 more people this year will need international aid. Among the most vulnerable are the children, who are suffering from the highest rate of severe malnutrition in the past 4 years. WHO warns many are likely to die without immediate medical attention. WHO incident manager for the Horn of Africa, Lisbeth Elbrecht, warns the situation will worsen with the onset of El Nino, a climate phenomenon that can cause excess rains and temperatures to rise.
Flooding and hunger and drought will increase hunger even further, but it's also very likely to increase the risk of mosquito-borne diseases, so especially malaria and dengue, and water-borne diseases.
She added that malaria is one of the five main causes of death in South Sudan. Speaking Friday from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, to reporters in Geneva, Elbrecht says she just left South Sudan. In the capital, Juba, and in Bentiu, the capital of Unity State. She says she visited stabilization centers where families bring severely malnourished children for medical treatment. While there, she says she saw doctors trying to resuscitate babies on life support. In one instance, she says she saw a baby pass away in her mother's arms.
I quote figures, I give you percentages, but that behind all these figures, there are these faces. And standing there as a bystander and watching this child die of hunger and of preventable diseases, even after doing medical humanitarian work for 25 years now, it does remain one of the most difficult things to do.
Elbrecht says all is not lost. Much can be done to protect people with relatively little. She acknowledges a lot of money will be needed to provide the aid so desperately needed by these millions of people. However, she adds, the returns are great, as feeding people and preventing and treating infectious diseases are highly cost-effective interventions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a South Sudanese-American doctor is saving lives in Kajukeji County. Find out how after this break.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Healing Kadi Foundation, a U.S.-based nonprofit established in 2007, has been offering a holistic approach to improve the physical health of individuals and communities in Kajukeji County of South Sudan's Central Equatorial State. Dr. Joseph Dumba, who oversees the operations of the foundation, says access to medical care, nutrition, and clean water remains a big challenge in South Sudan.
The situation is pretty dire. And as you know, our country has been going through multiple times when there has been war in the villages and people have been displaced. And so the infrastructure is really very, very limited, especially in the rural areas.
And when you talk about limited infrastructure, what are you talking about specifically?
Well, you know, before 2013 war broke out, we had health systems set up. There were at least hospitals that were functioning, even though they were not equipped very well, but they were functioning. Now, in most villages, there's no hospitals functioning. The clinics, what we call the health centers, have been closed. And people basically have to look for health services elsewhere, sometimes across the borders in other countries.
And talk to me about the Kade Foundation. I mean, you have been in the forefront of, if you like, efforts to ensure that the people in Kajukeji County get what you call quality healthcare services.
Absolutely. The Healing Cardi Foundation, I think I was on this program 10 years ago, and at that time it was still at its infancy. And now we've been serving there for almost 15 years now. There was a disruption where we had to move the clinic from South Sudan to Uganda from 2016 to 2021. But we've gone back because of the cry of our people. And we have established the clinic, or reopened the clinic, rather. And the clinic is functioning very well right now. We have our doctors and our nurses and clinical officers back on the ground, and we're providing as much services to our people as we can.
Talk to us about what the kind of services that this hospital is providing to people in Kajukeji, because we hear the needs are so many and healthcare is a few.
Absolutely. We provide basic health services to make sure that people don't die from things like malaria and pneumonia, you know, asthma. So our doctors are well trained. We have a pediatrician on board, and then we have an internist on board, and we have clinical officers as well as nurses. So we have a well trained group of health providers. The difference between us and whoever else is providing services in Kajukeji area is that we provide quality, and we provide quality medications as well, because most of our medicines either come from U.S. or come from Netherlands. We also have well-trained doctors. Our doctors are highly trained. We have sent them to schools to be able to come back and serve the people in a much better caliber. So when we talk about quality, we talk about people who are well, highly trained, and don't just treat people just giving them medicines, but actually treat the real diseases that are affecting our people.
And for someone like me who has never been to Kajukeji, could you describe this facility? How many wards are there? How many departments are there? Can you do surgery? Can you do all, you know, there are lots of people in South Sudan with chronic illnesses. Is this hospital taking care of them?
Well, we are in the process of building the hospital, but we're running a clinic. So the clinic has a capability. We have x-rays, we have lab, we have ultrasound, we have pharmacy, and we have an operating room. But we are not doing operations yet right now. Hopefully in the next year or two, we will be able to start doing that. But again, you know, our main goal right now is to prevent death from just basic things that are preventable. The surgical stuff, if we have to, which we have done in the past, is we either refer them to Uganda or we have to send them to Juba. In most cases, we send them to Uganda because the services are much better.
And who is funding you? I mean, this is not a very cheap operation, looking at the remoteness of the area and even what you are describing to me. I mean, some hospitals within the capital don't have those facilities.
We are very lucky to have a lot of our American friends who are basically funding us. But we also have created a system that we want to be sustainable. So we have asked the people on the ground, despite the fact that they're poor, they have to contribute something small so that tomorrow, when the funding dries out from coming from outside, they can help themselves. You know, we are teaching them how to use their local resources to be able to provide some of the funding that goes into buying medications or to pay off some of the employees who are working.
What kind of local resources are you talking about? I mean, when I look at South Sudan, this is a farming community. They have goats, chicken, and maybe their granites. What kind of local resources are you talking about?
Absolutely. And exactly those are the resources that we're talking about. When we started out, people didn't know that, you know, if you have a chicken, that's actually a resource. You can take it to the market, sell it, and come and pay, you know, a portion of that instead of bringing it to us. Initially, when we started out, they brought out this chicken. And then we started teaching them that, you know, the chicken is actually too much. We don't need all that chicken. So go take it to the market, sell it for 10 pounds. Bring us 2 pounds and then keep the other 8. So now they're actually learning that, you know, if they have gee nuts, they can take it to the market, sell it, and then come get treatment in the clinic. And it's working out very well, and they're learning that, you know what, they're not really as poor as people may describe.
That's Dr. Joseph Dumba, the president of the Cardi Healing Foundation, a U.S.-based nonprofit established in 2007. He was speaking with me in our studio here in Washington. We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. Many of you wrote to us this week about news and events we covered in this broadcast. We start with this voice message.
Hello, John and Nabil. Thank you for the program. We appreciate. Let me comment on the attack along Juba Yei Road. For me, I condemn that. And those people who attacked those convoy, me, I call them, these are failed people. This is National Salvation Front. These are failed people. There's nothing they can do again. They have failed in their mission. So as they have failed and they are ashamed of themselves, that's why they have just remained in the bush stealing people's things. So these are people who cannot rule. They cannot never rule the country. These are just thieves, criminals who has remained in the bush stealing people's things. We shall keep on praying in our various camps, and God will punish them. Thanks for the program.
Several of you commented on President Salva Kiir's recent trip to Russia and his meeting with President Vladimir Putin. Mading Malwal Alwong in Juba says, Russia appears to be winning on the global diplomatic stage, especially when compared to the recent U.S. visit where President Biden sent only his deputy secretary of state to meet with President Salva Kiir. This falls short of the respect our president deserves. I am disappointed in the current U.S. administration's foreign policy, as they seem to be turning away from their friendly nations. It's good that Putin agreed to meet our president and address the humiliation we experienced from the U.S. president. This fan says, hello VOA, I am Parag Michael in Juba. The visit of President Kiir to Moscow is vital. He should focus on economic reform and address the alarming insecurity across the country. Thanks. James Roy Majog from Mayom County in Unity State writes, hi Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. The South Sudan government should heed the advice from the American government. If we want the arms embargo and individual sanctions to be lifted, we need to respect global human rights laws as other countries do. This will help us establish good diplomatic relations with the international community. Thomas Kuntoch in Ol Fangak Payam in Fangak County of Jonglei State writes, hello VOA. The visit of South Sudan's president to Russia may negatively affect the close relationship between the South Sudanese government and the USA government, as well as UN bodies. This could have adverse effects on the 2018 revitalized peace agreement. Mal Adao Mal in Seattle, Washington says, hello VOA, I don't believe South Sudan is benefiting from bilateral talks around the world. It seems like a waste of a huge sum of dollars on such missions. It would make more sense to first address our internal challenges within the warring parties in Juba. Another fan says, good evening, John Tanza. I am Felix Braba from Rhino Camp in Uganda as a refugee. Could you please share any good news regarding the areas of Morobo and Kaya? I am really suffering in the camp. May Almighty God bless you and protect our country to achieve peace. Tok Chuni Yong Kwai from Juba says, to me, what is going on in the South Sudan Parliament about the permanent constitution-making process will fail the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. I am asking our parliamentarians to work together and pass our laws before the election, as is specified in Chapter 6 of the peace agreement. Thanks. Another listener says, hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. I prefer not to reveal my name due to security concerns in our village. Why are soldiers who are supposed to protect people killing civilians who have no problems with anybody? Recently, three people were killed in the area of Ombasi in Otogo Payam. Now, four people working in their garden were killed in Lasu Payam. Why is the international community silent? There is negative peace in South Sudan. Please help us. This listener says, hello, John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. I am Peter Ajag Ayom, a civil society activist in Bor Jonglei State. I find it shocking that the National Minister of Information, Honorable Michael Makwey, claimed not to understand the importance of civic space in the country. This is concerning, especially since his party, the SPLM, is preparing for the 2024 elections. Civic space is crucial for keeping citizens well informed about current affairs and events in the country. It seems we lack true leadership in this country, and it is only up to God to help us. Peter Gonyanyang Majungdul in Block 3 in Bor says, the outbreak of cholera and other diseases amid the ongoing conflict in Sudan is a serious setback, especially for the displaced and congested population camps across the country. This listener says, dear John Tanza and Nabil Biagio, I am Ton Mamour Maket in Juba. South Sudanese no longer want to hear more excuses from the parties to the revitalized peace agreement regarding the implementation process. What they want is for the agreement to be fully implemented and for permanent and sustainable peace, security and stability to be restored in the country. Thanks. And finally, Saber Isaac Khamis in Juba says, hello, John Tanza. The deadlock between oppositions and SPLM under Salva Kiir's leadership over the allocation of commanding positions within the unified forces may cause unnecessary delays. The two leaders should set aside their arguments and agree on a reasonable allocation of the commanding structure as outlined in the peace agreement. He further says, the excessive number of senior officers in the South Sudanese Army is unique and laughable compared to other countries' army structures. We cannot have a large number of officers without enough junior officers. Thanks. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming.
And I'll repeat, keep those comments coming. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We shall sample some of your voice and text messages every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Friday, September 29, 2023. We now leave you with Joseph Kinasuk singing in his native Bari language. Listening to Joseph Kinasuk singing in his native Bari. I can assure you, if you sing in your native language, I will give you airtime. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Helen, we wish you a lovely weekend. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.